I've always been a fighter. It always got me in trouble. But there's nothing I do better in this life than fighting. I'm an average guy, more than average. This is my dream. Nobody was taking this away from me.
Michael, the Count Bisping.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered.
Please tell me that's on video. I've never been happier.
I'm made for a fucking podcast. That's dangerous. Listen to me, we're at it.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered. They just started recording, Matt, as you were putting your shirt on, and it bugs me that they didn't do it sooner. What a great way to start. We would have had you shirtless getting ready.
Thank you, my little freaky friend. You like me with my shirt off.
Well, I just think that the audience should see it. If I have to see it, I think they should see it. We should share in it.
I'm sure you've seen worse.
Well, it's all a relative term. I've seen people who are in less shape than you every morning when I'm in the shower. I see my own awful bosoms. We have an interesting show today, too. A couple of friends of mine, comedians Jason and Randy Sklar, they're known as the Sklar Brothers. I haven't seen those guys in a while. They tour, they're funny comics, and they're hosting podcast View from the Cheap Seats and Dumb People Town. And they have something coming on Fight Pass. I'm not exactly sure what it is. And we have Michael Bisping joining us in a little while. We haven't talked to Mike in a while. And it'll be interesting to get his perspective on that whole minor incident between Cormier and Dominic Cruz.
Jimmy, all I know is the fights were amazing.
Yeah.
The other night. And I just want to let you know, and I'm going to be talking about it. I don't care if they don't want me to talk about it, because I'm going to – don't have me do something and have me not talk about it. I'm going to talk about it.
What would they have you not talk about?
I don't know. I did that watch party the other day at Longo's.
How was it?
Horrible.
Was it? No.
Jimmy, compared to what? Compared to your watch party?
Well, it's different. Ray's a very knowledgeable guy.
I can only hang out with him socially on certain things. This is why. Can I tell you why? Do we have a
show? Sure. Yes.
Let me tell you. I get there myself and the great Marab. Me, him, and Marab. Marab gets a little late because he had the corner of a buddy of his.
Okay.
So, like, dude, first of all, I'm an animal person, Jimmy. I grew up with dogs.
Sure.
I always grew up with, like, at least two dogs around. You know what I mean? Geronimo. Yeah. May Geronimo rest in peace. And Queenie. Loved Queenie. Anyway, the point is this. I don't skeeve dogs, but dude, Longo, get little fucking hairy Lucky under control. This little dog, it was like one of those little dogs, like the tiny ones, like from Men in Black.
Oh, yeah.
It was hairy. It was like a little blonde hair. And it's all over everything. And like, you're eating. Dude, the thing's breathing all over my fucking pizza. And Longo's like, first of all, listen, there's no bad animals. Just like there's no bad kids.
Sure.
Parents and bad owners.
Yeah.
Longo's a bad fucking owner. He doesn't discipline this little fuck.
Yeah.
Well, this dog is everywhere. And I'm even the guy, one of the guys producing it, this guy, Nick, nice guy, has Star Wars knowledge. You know, he's sitting there, he's got this fucking dog breathing all over his fucking pizza. I go, Longo, it's not our place to reprimand your dog. How about you get the dog the fuck out of the room? How about that?
Yeah.
No, Lucky, get away. It's his house. What do you want? It's his house.
Yeah.
Jimmy, listen, you would have been so fucking skeeved. I don't want the fucking dog all over my goddamn food. I don't give a fuck.
Let's bring in the Sklar Brothers. Yes, what? I agree 100%, Matt. I agree.
You're bringing them in now.
Sure, we have to. We have Michael Bisping coming shortly.
I'll talk to somebody else about my weekend.
There they are.
What's up?
Hey, guys.
How you doing, guys?
Guys, good to see you, man.
How did I not know you guys were big? Are you big MMA fans? I didn't realize that.
We are MMA fans. We love MMA. But I'm like, we're sort of like newly kind of getting into it. We're like more general sports fans, but getting super into it lately. I'm fascinated by it for a lot of reasons. But I just love that, like, we were not told, by the way, to shave our heads for this.
That's okay. We like the balance. We like the balance, you guys and us.
I don't know if you guys can pull this look off. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, there's no way. No, we'd too big of a schnoz. People would be like, are you guys sick? I mean, when people say it to Norton, they're like, are you sick in the head?
Yeah, it's a preference question.
Yeah, it's a different sickness that Norton has.
So you guys are like the Conor McGregor era with the mixed martial arts. You're like, you know who Conor
I mean, we watched, look, did we kind of definitely followed the result. I didn't watch the, but we watched all the.
We were doing shows this weekend, but we watched, basically watched the fights from this weekend.
We can talk about all the fights from this weekend. I mean, they were fantastic. I mean, one of the biggest upsets in all of UFC.
That's what I heard.
That was crazy. I mean, honestly, but yet it is surprising, but it's not surprising. It's almost like no matter how good you are, somebody's going to beat you sooner or later.
That's the nature of that game. And well, any punch can catch anyone at any point. Like everybody's good enough to catch someone in a moment and drop them. But to me, and I don't want to like, we were kind of really trying to analyze it. I mean, the pre-fight press conference between Nunes and Perez to me was like foretold.
Juliana Pena.
I'm sorry. That shows you what we're doing. No, Juliana Pena. That to me foretold what would happen in the fight. Because like Nunes comes in the Woody Allen hat. She was going to touch up this kid. And she's, but like, didn't have all the information. I felt like she like came in hot, but like Pena was like, yeah.
Then I ragdolled some girl who, or I beat the girl who ragdolled you or something like that. And it's like, well, you can't come back from that. You just pop, pop, pop.
I wonder if, Matt, you would know better, obviously, but she said something about like her head might not have been in it. Did you ever have that where you just know you don't have it? Like for standups, we know like there's times you're on stage and you're like, I just don't have what I need right now. Does that happen in a fight?
Well, it's different in her situation. I wasn't that reigning goat. You know what I mean?
Like yeah,
I considered, right. I was, you know, I had my losses before I even got to that point in my career. I was one of the hugest upsets. I'm not the guy on the other end.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Those are the ones who get cocky. Or like, nah, and I don't want to say that about Amanda, but when nobody's giving your opponent a shot at you.
Right.
And like, and you're being unbeaten for so long, you're beating scary monsters, no offense, in the cage, like Cyborg.
I mean, yeah.
Cyborg. You want to meet Cyborg in a fucking dark alley? You know
no.
what I mean?
No.
You know what I mean? Then you look at Julia Pena. I mean, it might not be as frightening, but shit, she did. When you brought up that press conference, you brought up a very good point.
Yeah.
When she said that she ragdolled the girl that ragdolled
her.
That's, she's talking about Kat Zingano. Kat Zingano had to weather a hell of a storm when she fought him. People forget about this. Amanda Nunes put it on Kat Zingano in round one. And then after that, she got tired, and it was kind of similar to what happened here. So this is not the first time she lost like this. I know people might not remember, but if they go back and look at her fight with Kat Zingano, you're going to see something similar. Somebody that survived a fucking assault in the beginning and then overcame. Juliana Pena didn't have to survive that. She actually did a good job of getting a grappling early and getting the blood in her fucking in her arms. So that takes away a little bit of the pop also.
Were you surprised at how Pena was just landing that jab? Like just landing the jab. I mean, landing it over and over and over again. It looked like Nunes was tired. I agree with you. I think all the pressure is off Pena to walk in that ring. She was like, I'm going to beat you and then I'll take that. This is in the press conference. I'll beat you and then I'll take that fight again and I'll beat you again and I'll be at 11-2. That's what I love about athletes anywhere. You know, like we're University of Michigan fans, football fans. We didn't beat Ohio State for 10 years. And every single team, when they walk out of the tunnel before that game, they're like, we're going to kick their ass. We're going to kick their ass. We're like, really? Have you been watching for the last decade? You haven't been able to kick shit. And now, so I just love that athletes and especially fighters are like, no, I'm going to win and I'm going to beat her again.
Isn't it weird to see that like, as comedians? It's so weird to see that confidence because like whenever they're like, I'm the best in the world. All I'm thinking of is like, if they said, we're going to bring you out, but we're going to say that you're kind of sucky and I'm like, fine, great. I amazing.
Yeah.
I can never oversell. I guess for fighting, you need that ability, that mentality.
You do, but I will say this, Norton, about your comedy is that when you focus on your own weaknesses, that's when you actually turn weaknesses into strengths. I think that's a big part of comedy. It's kind of the opposite for fighting. But like in comedy, you're like, you walk up, if Jim Norton's on stage and you're like, I'm just trash, the crowd goes crazy and you're making fun of yourself. Like that's something that you understand that's a power source for you.
But I mean, the truth of the matter is in
Ed Norton, you'll agree, I think, is like, you go out on stage as a comic, you don't really know what you're going to get from time to time. Like, you don't know how the crowd is going to be. You get a late show Friday night in a club over a weekend. You're like, they've been working all day. They've been drinking all night. This could go one of two ways. Either they're going to love it and then we're going to ride this wave and it's going to be great. I think in very similar ways, you step in the octagon, that's the same thing. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but don't you feel that way? It's like, you don't know what you're going to get.
And there's the same number of people in the octagon normally as at my late shows.
Someone's going to get injured too.
Some drunk woman coming at you wanting to take your neck off. Right.
When you walk into that cage, you know that. Well, I'll tell you, it could be, going in, especially you have a loss or two. It could either be the best night of your life or probably one of the worst. You're either going to have a glorious moment that's hard to describe, or you get embarrassed in front of everybody you know, and you can get like an ugly knockout. You can get backfisted by a guy wearing a Speedo. You don't know what could happen in that.
Someone's going to climb up a wall and
get fucking crazy. Let me ask you something, guys, as comedians and being brothers, who started first? And did somebody, what's the age difference with you guys?
Yeah, so we're twins. We're twins. That was his Juliana Pena. That was his Pena Perez moment. We're twins. And we basically started at the same time. We were both fans of comedy, like huge, huge comedy fans. Like early on, we were teenagers and kids, and we're like, we want to do this. And the crazy thing is, there are no twins. There were no twins doing it. There certainly weren't twins like
on TV.
On TV, and we could be like, oh, we want to be like them. So we just were like, oh, we love Richard Lewis and David Letterman, and
Chappelle. I mean, and Chappelle kind of was starting around the same time as us, but like. Shandling, we love Gary Shandling.
And like, we're like, let's just go. And we didn't even ever say, like, should I go on stage and then you go on stage and then we'll both try it together. We were just like, oh no, let's just both go up together. We didn't even discuss
it. And we started in New York around the same time Jim did, like, right? Early 90s in New York?
I started in Jersey in 1990 and I came into New York probably 95, mid-95, yeah.
So we got to New York in 94. We had been doing it in Ann Arbor and Detroit. And St. Louis, like 92, 93. So right around the same.
Best. Jim did our MTV show. He did stand up on our MTV show.
Did we give you your first TV spot? Was that your first?
What year was that? Because my 96, first.
97.
It's close. It was either that or the Louis Anderson show.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Friday Night Videos. It's right. in that whole. What was Apartment 2F? Remember Galifianakis had a show like Apartment 2F? Wasn't that Zach's show?
Apartment 2F. Zach Galifianakis was on that show. Michael Showalter, who's gone on to be a great director, he was a part of that show.
Really? Here's the stand-ups.
You'll love this.
So it was a sitcom, but like with sketches and stand-ups and short films. Here's the stand-ups. Jim Norton, Patrice O'Neill, Bill Burr, Patton Oswalt, Arch Barker. Who else? Jim Florentine.
Yeah.
Jordan Rubin. Unbelievable.
It was killer. Jeff Ross did it. UCB, Amy Poehler, first time on TV, all that stuff.
Oh, really?
Even Colbert did it. It was great. Amazing, amazing show.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, you look at all those old shows, and there were so many of them to do. And for a younger, up-and-coming comic, like the first 10 years, it was nice to have some TV opportunities. Yeah. MTV was good. MTV was good to comics.
They really were. Definitely.
I was going to say, Jimmy, I'm confused, though. Now, how are you? Well, Jimmy, you're kind of in similar shoes doing this show with me. But how do you guys be in comics? I mean, were you always involved with sports? Did you play when you were younger?
Yeah. So we're huge sports fans. And then in the early 2000s, we did a show on ESPN Classic called Cheap Seats, where it was like Mystery Science Theater with the old weird sporting events. So we would watch everything from dog shows, cheerleading competitions, beard and mustache championships, spelling bees, and over the footage.
Old wrestling, boxing.
And we would make jokes over it. So we did 77 episodes of that show. It was like a cult classic. So many people watch it. I mean, like, and we're hearing now, like, we'd hear from, like, so we'll have people on our podcast. We do a sports podcast called View from the Cheap Seats. And we'll have, like, who do we have on there? Like, someone, Ryan Dempster, who pitched for the Cubs. And he was, like, you know, back with, like, Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor and those guys.
Back in the Steve Bartman year.
In the Steve Bartman year. they, in the clubhouse, they had their DVR was literally just filled with episodes of our show. And you just like hear this, that athletes, you know, cause they watch classic and they
turn Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he came up to us, was like, "Hey, I love Chief Seats." Like tons of people knew it. Yeah. Yeah. It's like crazy. Cause it was on ESPN and they would run it all the time. So that tied us in, like kind of connected our comedy and our love of sports together. And we've just been kind of doing it ever since. We'll guest host Jim Rome show and literally get deep in the weeds in sports with that. And I mean, again, there's a lot that I love about UFC. I love that a woman's fight can be like the headline of the card. So there's like, it's, you know, this is the way it should be in tennis. I'm like, how many people are watching like some obscure 6'7" Croatian guy play an obscure 6'8" Serbian guy in tennis? Whereas opposed to you're like, do you want to see Serena Williams play? Yeah, I do. That's right. Actually more important to me than watching these two fucking no names over here do it. So it's like, I feel like UFC gets it right. Also, you guys talked about like, well, that was just Nunes's time. You know why? Because the fights get made every month. Like we all wanted to see Manny Pacquiao fight Floyd Mayweather Jr. We did for 5-6 years. They didn't make the fight.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that's
you ruined it. You the window is gone.
So UFC makes the fights you want to see, and there's always a great one. So there's something exciting about that. It gives the fans exactly what they want.
Yeah, I've liked that too about UFC, is that they're always trying to get you the fight. That's probably because there's only one promoter, and that's UFC.
That's right.
So it's all kind of done in-house. But you don't have to wait crazy amount. Like when a fight makes sense, except for like Masvidal Edwards, and sometimes a fight will get ready to be made, but then something happens and it just keeps getting fucked up.
And then
up.
You got
to
get another guy in, yeah.
Yeah, but normally you're right, dude. They I'd say 80% of the time make those fights happen while people still have interest. It's really... brilliant. What do you guys have coming on Fight Pass? They told us you have something coming on Fight Pass.
So I don't know if we're allowed to announce it, but we are developing we're developing a show that will harken back to our cult classic Cheap Seats through Fight Pass, looking at some great old footage that lives in the world of Fight Pass. Because, I mean, Fight Pass is incredible. Like, if you want to go back and watch, like, UFC 1, 2, 3, like, you can see how far the UFC has come since the... What it was in the early days, this is the way we described it to them. It's like, take a look at your yearbook photo from 1989. You're like, what the fuck was I wearing? Why did I have a mullet? And why did I have a mullet in the front? You're like, Jesus Christ. Why did I have a perm and a mullet? But you're like, that's what I was doing back then. I know who I turned out to be. I know what I became. I know who I am now. But back then... almost like a love letter to UFC. So we're
it's great.
Yeah, it's cool. And it's fun for us to try and find a way to bring the kind of comedy that we would care about and watch and put right up next to the best comedies on television everywhere and put it in the arena UFC. Of UFC. So we're really excited. That's going to be this coming year. So we're pumped about it.
It's not going to be... Now, you guys, I don't know how knowledgeable you are with the fight game. Are you not just going to put like fucking Three Stooges sound effects in that fucking thing? Are you?
No, absolutely not.
What exactly am I looking at? Like, what am I going to be looking at? Like, they're showing UFC number fucking one with the sumo out, getting kicked in the face, the tooth goes into the front row. Are you working with that kind of thing? Like, what?
Yes.
All the way back.
We're going to be going way back, looking at all kinds of unbelievable and hilarious footage that, you know, and there's some other crazy fights that have happened recently, but we're going to try and find the moments that stand out as the most bizarre and funny. Yeah, we're not going to break down the fights technically. There are like way better people to do that, but there are hilarious things. Like, we're going to use the fights and moments and things within the fights to bounce out into comedy, sketches and bits and all that kind of stuff. So you'll see it's using it as like source material and springboard for creating a comedy show. With a healthy respect for the sport, and because we do respect it. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't put Snoop Dogg on there.
Mm-hmm. It won't be that
commentary. I don't know how that show didn't fucking take off.
Well, look what Snoop's doing right now. I mean, with Snoop and Kevin Hart, what they did with the Olympics and stuff like that.
So goddamn funny, and it's amazing.
What are they doing?
They're just doing commentary over like weird stuff that's happening. They did it in the last...
They would like do the wrap up of like, this is what happened today. And it's like a horse doing like a horse thing. And Snoop's like, why is that horse crip walking? And we're like, that's funny.
I'll take that. I like it.
So that kind of... I was like, are you saying because that horse is a blood? Is that what you're saying?
Or is...
Yeah. Because it would be weird if a blood was crip walking. Yes. Whatever. I don't need to get in the weeds with, you know, and speaking of weed, Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, so you guys are doing gigs too, right? Do you always tour together? Do you guys go out on stage together, or
yeah, man?
How do you work?
We're up there together. We're on stage, and we, yeah, we just got back from Tempe, Arizona, doing the Tempe Improv, which is a great club. Love that. We're doing a New Year's show, which we typically we don't, but we're going to Aurora, Illinois, to do the Comedy Shrine, and then we have like one gig a month for the next several months that we're doing. So Denver Comedy Works in January. DC Comedy Loft in February, Hilarities in Cleveland in March, go to the Back to the Moon Tower Comedy Festival, which is awesome, in Austin, and then go to the Crocodile Rock Club in Seattle in May, and then probably wind up at in Montreal this summer too. So, you know, keep it going. Love doing the live shows as we build up. You know, there's nothing more exciting as Norton, you can attest to this. There's nothing more exciting than coming up with a new bit and then putting it on stage and putting it through a weekend of shows, right?
Yep. Yeah. When it works. And it's almost fun sometimes when it starts to work and then it doesn't work, but then you fix it and it works. Yeah. It's a fun process when it turns out okay.
It's like fighting. You know, you start to say, and you know, it's like fighting where you say to yourself, okay, and Matt, you know this too, that like, you're like, okay, these techniques are working for me right now. And what if I were to pair that with this? You know, it's funny because, not to go back to the fights this past weekend, but like, you know, the Poirier fight, he was amazing and kicking the guy's ass in
round one,
but he was just doing one thing. And I thought, you know, Oliveira was so multidimensional and kept doing different things in round one that finally, yeah, in round two, he stepped up, and the other dimensions of Oliveira's game actually took Poirier. I was like, Poirier, you better knock him out, because this guy's still, you know, he's still
hanging around.
A lot of knees, a lot of elbows, and he's hanging around. And then that weird second round where, you know, Poirier is just on his back the whole time.
His jiu-jitsu came into play.
That's right.
And Jimmy actually picked by rear naked choke. That was me. I'm sorry. I knew
you picked that, Matt. All right, good.
I might have picked him winning by
rear
naked choke.
You did. You did.
I knew it was one of us. Guys, I have a question about you writing your bits.
Yes.
Because, you know, I get fascinated by the stand-up comedy, and I like to know people's writing style. Do one of you just come up to the other one and go, I got this idea, or vice versa, and then you play off each other? Or is that how it works?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, obviously with like one person, it's, you know, this happened to me and you kind of go through it. But for us, we're almost like a band. We were watching that documentary about great documentary about Tom Petty, where he's talking about being on tour, and he's just like, he had the guitar riff for The Waiting, and he's just like the whole time in a motel room, he's like, do 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 do. He was doing it all day, and finally his band members are like, shut the fuck up,
or let's sit down and write.
So he had the little kernel of it, and then they built the song out of it. So a lot of that happens with us, where something happens, and we're like, okay, what's the overall idea? How do we then, what's the truth in the thing? What are some jokes about the concept? So we can even just tell you, like, of something we just wrote that just happened this weekend. Like, we literally just wrote it this weekend, put it up on Saturday night, Saturday early, Saturday late, Sunday show. We did it. And now it's like a new bit that we're going to start.
So I have a 7-year-old daughter, and I was just explaining how she'll just make regular observations to me about me that are more insulting than the worst insults I've ever heard in a relationship ever. Right. So she'll just be like looking at an old picture of us and be like, Daddy, remember when you had all that hair? That's not mean.
Not mean.
That's not mean at all.
Just
like for a month, I'm like, great. Now I'm a bald asshole. Like it burrows into your soul. She's like, I came out to go do stand up and she looked at my shirt and she's like, does that shirt fit?
Not mean.
Not mean.
That is not mean at all.
But you're like, thanks a lot. Now I'm not going to have dessert for a month. Wonderful. God damn it. And then she said, Dad, you're the oldest dad in my class. And I was like,
made some mistakes in my 20s.
Yeah, maybe I was focusing on my career. Why am I justifying myself to you?
Fuck?
Why am I? I'm not Larry fucking King, all right? I can pick you up
every once in a while.
Jimmy, this is, might be more funny than me because I have an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old. So my little daddy, I'm like, I'm 5'6", you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, little daddy. No, she
little daddy.
You hear me walking up? I walk a little fucked up, my knees from, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a little, your body takes a toll.
Sure.
Get into the Hall of Fame, like Jimmy will tell you.
Sure.
The kids will hear me upstairs. Ah, here comes the zombie. Dude, I'm with you, man. These kids are fucking brutal.
They're brutal. So, I made you. So you talk about the process, and Jim, you'll love this. So that was the thing that we had.
And we started riffing around with that and having fun. And then we were like, what's the bit beyond that? How can we make it a Sklar Brothers bit? Like, how do we make it a bit beyond that? And so we're like, so I started saying, you know, I'm not the only old dad. There's a lot of old dads now. Old dads with like
little Matt. How old are you, Matt? How old are you?
I'm 47.
Okay, we're 49. So we're old dads. That's just what it is. You look around and people are having kids later. They're old dads. So we're like,
I want to make money off that.
Yeah, we got to monetize this. So we said, for a bunch of old dads who can't do all the things their little kids want, your knees are fucked up, you can't do it. We want to create an app that
we're going to call it Young Daddy. And I know that sounds like a gay sex app.
We'll work on the title.
Please,
whatever.
Stay with us.
They got excited.
We'll work on that. So Jimmy got excited. So it's Young Daddy, but maybe we'll call it Lyft. It's like Lyft or Uber, like lift up
your kids for you.
All right. So your kid asks you to do something like, Daddy, roll down this hill with me.
And you're like,
obviously I can't do that. But if you open up the app,
you say, if you wait for 3 minutes, Samir will be here in a white Jetta and he's going to roll down the hill with you. He's got a lot of cologne on.
That'll just roll off. And by the way, I love you, honey. Watch your back. He's got only 3 stars.
It's the closest one.
He's the closest guy in the area. And so it becomes this act out where we do a bunch of scenarios of young dads. And that became, you know, it was a germ of an idea based off of my daughter making observations and me talking about the truth of that they hurt.
That's where it starts. And then it works through the thing and it gets to the point where we're like coming up with this app called Young Daddy, where it like you get young dads to do the things that old dads won't want to do. And that is like more relatable to everybody. And suddenly we have a 5 minute,
because then it becomes a bunch of jokes about Ubers and Lyfts and how...
Like my favorite joke is like, if you just wait 11 minutes, Muhammad will be here in a red Corolla. And then it's like about the car, about the guy.
And why is it 11 minutes? Well, he's finishing up a piggyback ride in the area. So like now we're making Uber jokes, right? So you got it. So it's super fun for us. And I don't know if you're watching the Beatles documentary right now on Disney Plus.
Yes, I think I'm 17 hours in.
Okay, great. So you're just in the first episode?
First episode.
Super. It's only, so you got to the point where they're just tuning their instruments. All right.
Good, they're still the Silver Beatles.
It's only 3 hours shorter than the Irishman. All right. So, but in that thing, that what I love about it, I'm sure you do too, is that it's about the process, how an idea starts. It's so cool to hear them singing Get Back. And he's like, something Arizona. Should I say something from Arizona? And like you hear them forming the words, doing it wrong first, and then getting it to where we all know it.
I mean, I wonder if this is the way it is. And Matt, you can talk about this too. But like, do fighters, you know, because obviously fighters have specialties and they're like, this is what I do. I'm a ground and pound guy. I'm a stand up fighter. I will knock your block off. And this is how I fight you. I'll kick the shit out of you. And that's how I do it. Do they formulate their voice as like their fighting voice, so to speak? You know what I mean? Like, I'm known for this. This is who I am. And that's my voice in the ring.
Well, there's KO artists, and then there's also just guys that are, there's different levels in each area. Like, in other words, you have to be well-rounded. It's not UFC number one. Everybody's at least blue belt level on the ground.
Right.
Nobody should be mounted just sitting there trying to push them off. They should have ideas how to get out. They should have ideas how to take away a takedown, even if they're an expert striker. But then there's levels to that. Now, when I heard Dustin Poirier talking how there's basically no more just disciplines, everything's mixed martial arts and you have to be, but there's such a level in, you saw a very competitive standing up.
Yeah, awesome.
And Dustin, where was there a big difference?
When he was on the ground,
And I told, before this fight started, I told Jimmy, I go, look, man, when's the last time he fought a straight up, or a real specialist in the grappling realm?
Habib. Yeah.
And it was Habib. Habib, if you're doing Rock'em Sock'em, if you're doing all these stand-up fighters from Max Holloway all down the line to Bobby Green with these different styles, Dustin Poirier, he matches up well across the board standing up. He's durable. He could fight out of both stances. He's fucking – he's a beast.
Yeah.
Look what happened with Habib when he got him down. He strangled him. Now he has another shot at the title. And the guy with the most submissions in the division.
In UFC history. Am I crazy? Or is
UFC
one...
history.
Yeah.
So you put that together – shit, man. I'm like, yo, this guy gets his back, it could be a wrap. Like, so there's differences in that one area. So that's when you saw it. When he took him down and everybody's like, why is Dustin keeping a locked guard? That was a bad sign.
That was a bad sign because you're like, he's got no answers. He's got no answers to what's going on, right? It's what you said. You got to have an answer.
Yes.
It's, to me, that's cool about UFC fighting as well, is that it's a lot of like, okay, your strategy is this. Now, how do I combat that? How do I combat your strategy to do this to me? Because you could see Oliveira trying to get him down to the ground.
I'm not bringing this back to me, Jimmy. Don't embarrass me.
No, I know. But
when I won the title, when I upset you on St. Pierre, I'm just bringing up, listen.
Sure.
Part of the reason, and I'll be the first to admit it, I was known as a fucking jiu-jitsu master. Here we go. Sera jiu-jitsu.
There you go.
I like to hug my shit. But the point is, everybody's like, yo, if he gets it down, he has a shot. But look, I used to fight in a smaller weight class. He fought better straight up wrestlers than me. Matt Hughes, Frank Trigg, Sean Sherk. So people said the chance of me getting him down is very unlikely. So the fact is, though, it looked horrible. Meanwhile, I knew I was going to stand up with the motherfucker because I knew getting him down would have been exhausted and then a shooting fish in a barrel. So I felt like I had that little ace up my sleeve
when people didn't
realize I was going to use a totally different game plan.
Right.
Until it was too late. And then the rematch, he found that shit out. It didn't work well.
Yeah.
But the point is, he didn't know in the first one with me going in, Jimmy.
Now, Jason and Randy. Yeah, I know. I'm going to say Randy. We have to get Michael Bisping on. What are you guys promoting? What do you want people to know? Like, what's the most immediate thing?
So I'd say the most immediate thing is listen to our podcast, View from the Cheap Seats at Sports and Comedy. I would also say we have a Patreon where we're doing old episodes of our old show, Cheap Seats. New episodes of our old show, Cheap Seats, called Cheaper Seats. And then come see us if you're in the Chicagoland area at the Comedy Shrine on New Year's Eve in Aurora. But supersklars.com is the website if you want to see where we're playing near you. And look out in the new year on Fight Pass for this new show, which is going to be super fun.
Super fun.
High-level comedy, and I think people on high-level comedy with mad respect for the game itself, and I think fans of UFC will love it. Comedy fans will love it. It might bring a new audience of people to UFC, and it certainly will bring a new audience of UFC people to us, and we feel like that's going to be a nice combo.
Thank you, guys. Jason, Randy, good seeing you guys.
You guys are awesome. Appreciate you.
All right, buddy. See you guys soon, man.
See ya. Bye.
You put in the work training at the gym, on the court, at the track, wherever you go. You push your body to the limit. Now, maximize your results. Discover how to unlock your inner champion with Thorne's high-performance sports nutrition line. With the most comprehensive line of NSF certified for sport products on the market, Thorne is the unquestioned leader in both quality and innovation in sports nutrition. With pre-built fitness bundles like Thorne's training bundle, you can jumpstart your training and fitness routines and help take your performance to the next level. Don't trust your body to anything else. Choose the supplement brand with the extensive third-party testing and the highest level of certification recognized in pro sports. Choose Thorne, the official sports performance nutrition partner of the UFC. Visit Thorne.com and use the promo code UFC10. That's T-E-N for 10% off. That's promo code UFC10 and you get 10% off. And Matt and I get the credit, and that's all that matters. This episode of UFC Unfiltered is brought to you by Love Hemp, the official CBD partner of UFC. Life can be a challenge. Whoever you are, we're all striving for a healthier lifestyle. Love Hemp, one of the leading premium organic CBD and hemp suppliers, here to help people like you. The Love Hemp range contains CBD oils, edibles, and topicals contain cannabinoids, which help support wellness and recovery to maintain your natural balance. It's even endorsed and used daily by elite fighters like Gilbert Burns, GSP, and Kamaru Usman. Whatever challenge you may be facing, Love Hemp, they're always in your corner. Love Hemp, helping you to be the best you can be. Available now via lovehemp.com across Europe and coming to the U.S. markets this year. There's Michael Bisping.
Hey!
How you doing, buddy?
What's up, fellas?
Believe you me, we're happy to see you.
Yeah.
I'm happy to see you guys as well. Look at the professionalism of your setup. Holy shit. There's some impressive cameras. You've never looked so ugly, Matt.
Michael Bisping, first of all, look at that
First of all, yes, he has.
First of all, look at that fucking hair. I will willingly, I'll pluck out my own eye if I can have a head of hair like that. You understand?
Whoa. Why are you going to talk about plucking out eyeballs just because I can do that?
My looks. All right, let's start again. Michael Bisping on this show. I'm only kidding.
Now, I got to ask you, Michael, to start, because I just watched it today. Our DC and DC... is everything cool between Cruz and Cormier? That was very awkward. And then you kind of went into mediated.
Yeah, it was a little awkward. You know, I was just sitting back in the background and I had no idea what they were talking about. I didn't know what Cruz had done. And then someone from the production team was like, you better get in there. This is turning kind of nasty. So I went in and gave some comedy relief. Fortunately, DC is a big cuddly teddy bear. He's not a man you want to mess with, but sure. He is a big cuddly teddy bear. And he handled it better than what I would have done. Let's just put it like that. Because if Cruz went up there and said that about me, I might have motherfucked him a bit. But DC was very, you know, he was very diplomatic about it. He was very calm. So all credit to DC. And listen, Dominic Cruz, he owned it. He said it right to his face. So, you know, call it right, call it wrong, call it whatever you will. But the man's not two-faced, I guess.
No, he's very honest with his opinions. And I don't even agree, because I happen to love the combination of you guys, or with Joe or with Anik. Like, I never listen to it and think, wow, DC, I wish he watched more film. I love what he brings. Like, I love what Cruz brings. Like, I the combination of all you guys works perfectly.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Problem is, I think Dominic was saying something about Dominic was saying how DC was commenting on one of his fights.
Yes.
So that's like a comedian watching you do a special, being like, yeah. And you're like, wait a minute, that's not how I set that up.
Yeah. I mean, you know how it is, Matt, though. As fighters, if somebody's talking about your fight in a certain way, maybe we are a little too sensitive. I know I've been in dressing rooms about to go out for a fight, and then on the pre-fight show, there's people predicting me to lose. I'm like, really? Okay. I'll remember that. But of course, they're just doing their job. DC does a great job. He's absolutely fantastic. Dom's out of his mind. Dom's great at what he does. Had a fantastic fight Saturday night. There it is. Drama over. They kissed, they made up, they're best friends again. All good.
And Dominic looked really, really good in that fight. I mean, I couldn't believe how well he fought. I was really happy to see it. You know, it was nice. He looked terrific. He did everything he wanted to do.
He got off to a rough start. I saw Pedro Munhoz put him down twice, I think. And I was like, oh, no, come on. Because even though Dominic, you do want to strangle him sometimes. And that's a fact. I've definitely had those emotions on more than one occasion. But still, you want the guy to win. I don't know Pedro Munhoz from anyone. I'm sure he's a very nice guy, but I know Dom. So I was like, oh, crap. This isn't looking good. But rounds 2 and 3, I thought he made some incredible adjustments. The speed was still there. The footwork, the elusiveness that he's known for. Yeah, really good performance.
What was there's a couple of decisions too, Michael. There's one of them that was, I thought easily was 29-28. And I was like, is this going to be even a split decision? And he went 30-27. And I'm trying to think, it was Cleary, I think was the, is that his name? The judge Cleary or Clearly? I remember him. It was kind of egregious. One of the fights he called that. Do you remember which one that was? It might've been Ige Emmett.
Yeah, Ige Emmett, I think that's the one that I saw, because I saw 30-27 and I immediately thought, well, Josh Emmett's won, because Josh Emmett dropped Ige in the first round. So there's no way that round can't have been scored a 10-9 for Josh Emmett. So when I saw that, I thought it's a 30-27, but Dan Ige definitely won at least one of those rounds. But it is what it is. That's the way it goes.
Yeah, that's got to be frustrating as a fighter, though, like to know that two guys can see it so completely. And is it because they put value on different things? One guy will value takedowns higher, or one guy will value, whoever's pressing the action more?
Yeah, I mean, I guess. But the thing is, you know, when it's a 10-9 and it can go either way, the round can still be clear, very, very close. You know what I'm saying? And you could argue it one way or another. So I didn't necessarily think it was egregious. I didn't think it was crazy. I just thought, oh, well, he saw it that way. You know, anytime there's these fights that are close, the word robbery gets thrown around far too often. When it's a close fight, it's a close fight. You know what I mean? And it is what it is. And the judge saw it your way. You know, maybe he could watch it again and score it another way. But as I say, when it's very close, the word robbery is going to stop being used. Like Max Holloway and Volkanovski. I thought Holloway won the second one. But it wasn't a robbery. It was a close fight that is down to your personal opinion, you know?
You know, And again, maybe for some reason, I remember thinking that Max won the first one too. If I watched it again, I might feel differently. But I thought the second one felt like, wow, he absolutely won that one. But I'm not a fighter, so you guys see so much more than I do. And you may see things that I would have thought like, wow, Max won that round. But you go, no, if you watch it closer, Volkanovski won. But I thought Max won both of those fights. Do you think that Volkanovski definitely won the first one?
Again, I'd have to go and watch it, so I don't want to speak. But I do know that when I saw the second one, because I called it, I even said I thought Volkanovski won. And then I had to do a post show, and Volkanovski came up to the desk, and I'm like, okay, well, he's going to go back and he's going to watch the fight. He's going to see what I said. So I've got to own it to his face, kind of like Dominic Cruz. I'm like, hey, buddy, I just said that world title fight that you just went out there and fought your ass off in. I just said that you lost to everyone to the world. But, you know, I had to be a man about it. And he took it in his stride. He's like, yeah, okay, that's cool. I said it respectfully. That was the difference.
Hey, let's talk about the new champ.
Yeah.
Big upset, huge upset. Juliana Pena, you know, with that rear naked choke over arguably the GOAT, Amanda Nunes. Now, when you really listen, hindsight's 20/20. We all know that shit. But when you really dissect this and you look in the past and you look at that press conference, what Juliana was saying, she has a point with the point where that one, she beat Cat Zagano weathered a storm and then put it on Amanda. It's been a while before. It was ages ago that happened. And since then, Cat Zagano had some mixed fights. She's no longer with the promotion and whatnot. And since then, Amanda Nunes looked nothing short of phenomenal. And look what she's done since. But y'all must have forgot. No, I'm only kidding. But you got to remember that shit. I mean, that happened. It's not like she never lost that way. So when nobody was ever, even Misha Tate, somebody with similar game plans, Ronda, it was way too late. When they want to try to tie her out by grappling, she's so good at the sprawl and brawl. She's accurate. Nobody was able to make her grapple. She was only grappling in those last fights with Jermaine Durandamé. I always fuck up her name.
Yeah. Durandamé.
I don't have Michael's job. But she's always able to initiate the grappling when she wants. So when Juliana was able to survive the striking and then get her to grapple, by the time they were able to strike again, now it's an endurance game. Now you don't have that pop in your in the strikes the same way you did in the opening bell. So then Juliana is able to stand up more with her, and there was the downfall. I'm just basically giving you guys a recap. So what did you do in the fight, Michael?
Yeah, you know what? To be honest, I thought Amanda Nunes showed in the first round what everyone expected her to do. You know what I mean? She outclassed her. She beat her in every position. She put her down twice. Even in the grappling exchanges, she hip-tossed her. She controlled her on the ground. She did what she was supposed to do. But in the second round, she gassed. She got tired. Now, whether or not that was because she got complacent in training camp, maybe the success and being the quote, as they now call her, maybe all this gets to you and you don't push yourself quite as hard. Whereas on the flip side, Juliana Pena, this is her shot of glory. This is her shot of gold. This is her shot at making all the sacrifice over the last 10 years really mean something to become the champion of the world and to beat Amanda Nunes. You can sure as hell guarantee that you are getting out of bed every day. You're doing your road work. You're doing those little tiny things that make the difference in training camp to be as successful. Was Nunes, we don't know. Did she get complacent? Did she rest on her laurels? You know, the points what you said there, Matt, a minute ago are great. But when you look at the reality, Pena's 2-3 or 3-2 in her last five. Right, Amanda Nunes is someone like on a 13, 14 fight win streak. Hasn't been beaten since 2014. She's beaten five people that Juliana Pena couldn't beat. Do you know what I mean? So on paper, it's Nunes all day. And that's what we saw in the first round. But as we said, that she's only human and things start going wrong and you get tired. Then you make mistakes and you start getting your head boxed off and you think, oh, I can stand there and go toe to toe with Cyborg. I can do this. I can beat her. You know, and that little voice in your head, that inner dialogue, that ego takes over and you stand there and trade in a straight line. She tried to go in five times with her right hand and walked into a jab every time. Pena followed up with some right hand, some left hooks. You know, it was, I'm a massive fan of Amanda Nunes, so I want to choose my words carefully. But it was a shocking second round, you know, to be honest. And the word quit gets thrown around. That's not, she did quit, she tapped. That's what you do. But that's the purpose of what your opposition's supposed to do. The whole point of this business is to make your opponent quit, either by lying on the floor, getting knocked out, submitting or whatever. And yeah, she made a quit because when you get tired, it makes cowards out of everybody.
After the, I thought she might have been like, you know how like we've talked about the Francis Stipe second fight, and when Francis sprawled, you knew that it might be a little bit of a tougher night for Stipe because that speed wasn't going to help. At the end of that round, first round, when Amanda, when she was trying to put her in a Kimura, and you knew she had to be very careful, that's when I said this might not be an easy night for her, because I can't remember the last time I saw her in any kind of trouble like that at all. And at the end of the first round, she was not in a great position.
Yeah, well, I think there was a few fights with Felicia Spencer with Jermaine Durandamy where she kind of got controlled a little bit. So I did expect Juliana to have some success in the early rounds in the grappling transitions. She's a big, strong girl. She grapples with guys like Michael Chiesa, you know what I mean? She's got that attitude. Juliana's a real fighter, you know what I mean? She ain't no dainty little ballerina. She's going to come out there. She's going to fight. She's not afraid to take it to Nunes. Yeah, hey, listen, bad night at the office for Nunes. Fantastic night at the office for Juliana Pena. That's the way it goes. Matt knows this. Every time you go in, you know, you hope you have a good night, but sometimes things don't click. Sometimes things don't feel right. And sometimes you get cracked in the face and you get your bell rung and it all goes out the window.
And it's a good rematch because you know that'll probably be Juliana's next fight. Well, her first defense will probably, I'm going to guess, would be against Amanda. So at least you have a great next fight and a great rematch to watch.
Yeah, one would have thought so. I mean, it makes sense. Generally, when someone's that dominant, the UFC put them in for an immediate rematch. Same with you, Matt, right? Was it an immediate one with you and George?
He had to fight. I got hurt. I was going to fight Matt Hughes. I blew my back out. And then he fought Matt Hughes. And then I fought him after that. Yeah.
Okay. But your first fight was him after the – you fought once, yeah.
Yeah, it went terribly. Let's get back to the latest fight.
No, but the point I'm making is though, generally when someone's a dominant champion like that, I'm trying to think of some other examples, but that's what they do. So I would assume that that would be Juliana's next match. I know she's calling out Shevchenko. I mean, wouldn't that be unbelievable for her to go from, you know, having a great career, but not being a champion or anything like that, to all of a sudden beating Nunes and Shevchenko back to back? Holy cow.
Nah, that's a movie to be written. Let me speaking of turnarounds, Charles Oliveira at one point was like 10-8 in the UFC. That's a 10-8. I seen that in a thing. And then the last 10 fights, 10-0. I hope I'm not making that up.
That's right.
Thank you so much. I'm not big on stats, but I remember that. Jimmy's like, you fucking make, you hitting that pen again? No. But my point is, what a fucking turnaround. And look at the guys he's facing and look what he's doing to them. I mean, what he did to Tony Ferguson is what he did to him. But even Michael Chandler, dude, he had his back, just like he took Dustin Poirier's back. I mean, this is a high level. What the fuck? What clicked in this guy's brain? Because he's not like he got a totally different skill set. He was always dangerous pretty much everywhere. But wow, what is clicking with this guy?
Well, it is the same skill set, as you mentioned. Still, skill set's always been there as well. And the narrative in the past was that he quit. You know, and when you get finished sometimes, I think it was 8 times. Fair enough. You can get that. That narrative may be acceptable to use. But I think that's out the window now. Because look at that fight against Chandler. End of the first round, he was all but done. He was on his all fours. He was swinging his head around, trying to stay in that fight. First round against Dustin Poirier, got dropped a couple of times. Do you know what I mean? You cannot say this man does not have heart. And you certainly got to say that he has balls. Because he walked Dustin Poirier down, relentless pressure, crazy high pace. And then in the second round, he had the ability to make the adjustments to say, all right, never mind this stand-up business. I'm getting my ass kicked. Boom, shot in, really powerful shoot to a double leg, to a body lock, and then trying to get the takedown. And as we know, we saw what happened. Incredible. I couldn't be happier. I'm devastated for Dustin, right? What a great guy. He's such a nice guy, you know, and you want to see the good guys win. Charles Oliveira is a good guy, though. You know, he comes from a very, very tough background. To see what he's doing down there in the favelas and giving back and helping people out. And Dustin donating $20,000 as well, even when he's lost.
Yes, to his town, right?
It's just beautiful. It's beautiful.
Who do you think is next for him? I'm going to guess it's Gaethje. Who do you think is next for Oliveira?
It's got to be Gaethje. I mean, think about it. Beneil and Makhachev, they still haven't even fought yet, you know? And I don't think Charles was too banged up after that. You know, you never know, but who knows? 2-3 months, Justin gets his shot. And then it's the winner of Gaethje versus Beneil. No, no. Makhachev versus Bader. It's early. I just finished my bloody workout.
Yeah, yeah. The winner of that will take the winner of Gaethje Oliveira. That makes sense. But I give anybody on the ground, I think, is the only person that has a shot against Oliveira. I think anybody that's primarily more of a stand-up fighter is going to have a very hard time against him, the same way they did against Khabib.
That's why I want to see that, Matt. Yeah. I'm sure you're intrigued about that. I want to see Makhachev against Oliveira because we know Oliveira can stand, but it would be awesome to see that match, that stylistic, you know, they've got different styles of grappling, but yes, to see that take place, I'd love to see that as a fan.
That's, well, if they grapple, though. You remember, like, Usman and Covington, and what is it, like, one takedown attempt in the first round? Like, they just both stood up because, what do you think that is? Is it because they both equally mastered? Does neither one of them want to lose that battle on the ground?
What do you think, Matt?
As far as with two grapplers, I think that sometimes it's too difficult to get each other down that they're saying, fuck this, I'm going to stand up with them. Because, you know,
that's exactly what it is. It's exhausting. It's exhausting to try and drag another man that knows how to grapple, that knows how to not get taken down. And you try and you try and you try. And in the end, you're like, oh, fuck this. Let's just fucking bang it out with our hands because it's a damn sight easier. It takes a lot less effort to swing that than what it does to try and wrestle another man down to the floor. You see, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just throw it down like real men.
But it's also different. Coming from like a jiu-jitsu mindset is that, you know, sometimes you don't need that clear takedown. You just need, like, it wasn't ideal for Chris Weidman, who's more, even though he's very good in jiu-jitsu, but he's more of a wrestling base. It's a big difference with him trying to jump on Luke Rockhold's back up against the cage, which is going to be worse to wear because most likely he's not going to finish him. And second of all, Luke's going to be chilling. And it's a big difference between like that type of situation and an Aljo Sterling. So getting the back, exposing somebody's back, just jumping up there. He could be there. He'll hang out there for fucking 25 minutes without his legs getting tired. Same thing with a Charles Oliveira. You expose the back. He could hop up on that back. All he has to do is see it. He doesn't need the takedown. And yet, look where it gets him. It gets him to the point of finishing. A Damian Maya. This is the difference between that type of thing. And I'm really interested, only because Mike brought it up, is Islam versus Brunel. That is going to say a lot because now you're dealing with a guy who does have that with Benil Darush. He has that jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu. So
he's high level.
I want to see Islam Sambo against that versus that jiu-jitsu in the grappling realm if it goes there because those guys are also very dangerous striking. And either one of those guys would be a great test for Charles Oliveira.
Oh, no, and it'd be great to see. I think Dustin, I mean, you know this, Matt. He made some critical mistakes Saturday night when you're getting up. I mean, you touched on it there. You do not give up the back. Simple as that. And if you're up against the fence, your shoulders are going to be against the fence. And, you know, you can't turn and give up half a shoulder or anything. Because a guy like Charles, he will take it. He will get it. And if you got him on your back, you're in trouble. Simple as that.
But now he might have been so paranoid of that, it cost him round two. Because, hey, man.
What's, no, of course.
You open up that guard with a good jiu-jitsu guy. He's going to play off your movement. Next thing you know, he's in half guard. Next thing you know, he's cross-eyed. So what Dustin did, he kept those fucking things locked. So, okay, you're not getting – well, he did take some punishment there. But
some elbows, yeah.
Overwhelmed, but, hey, dude, you just literally handed him this round that very well could be a 10-8 round because – we didn't do jack shit in it. Just like, you know what I mean? So.
Yep. I mean, it's risk versus reward, isn't it? The risk is that you can try and get back to your feet, but the moment you give that little bit of space, that separation, and guys like Charles are going to pass your guard, and then you're mounted. Then you're giving up your back or whatever it is, and then it's, then you know, then you're on a fast track to tapping out pretty quick. So he thought, you know, right now I'm just going to lock this guard. I've got the triangle guard, if you will. And Rogan thought maybe he'd hurt his hip, but I was like, nah, he's just playing it safe right here. You know, because he was out in the open as well. He was nowhere near the fence. You know, obviously, when you got the fence behind you, it's a little easier to get up. When you're out in the open, it's a little more tricky.
Yeah, that's got to really suck when you know there's a lot of time left too. There was a lot of time left on the clock when he went down, right? There was over 3 minutes, I think.
Yeah. No, it does suck.
I'm feeling, I mean, I like that Kai Kara France, and I'm always happy with my success. But man, I feel for Cody Garber. Sure. I really do. He's a young kid still. What is he, 30? Is he 30?
I'm not sure.
I just want to. It's, you've seen his fight back in the day with Dominic Cruz. It feels weird to say back in the day now because it was yesterday. But
5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean,
almost 6 years. It's about 5 years. Yeah.
I mean, to see him going in, practically just breakdancing and pulling off shit and
right.
hard to hit, comes back with a fucking lightning. And then, I don't know, just I don't like seeing a guy stopped more than once. Like, you know what I mean? Like, several, it's like, this is not good.
No.
So, I don't know, man. His head, I remember, I don't know if it's the weight cut. It's just like, yo, his head looks huge to me. I'm like, fuck, he's all head at 125. And fucking Kai was catching it early. And I didn't see any adjustments, and it was getting me scared. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tough one for Cody, isn't it? Because he's been finished a lot recently. Even at 35, the one that he didn't get knocked out and against Rob Font, he got handled for 5 rounds. Prior to that, knocked out 3 of his last 4. And then, of course, at 125, you think he's going to go down there. He might be the bigger guy. But making those weight cuts, it affects your ability to take a shot. I know that for a fact. At 205, I could take a punch way better than what I could at 185. Unfortunately, Cody needs to take some real time away now, I think. And then I'm not going to tell the guy to retire, right? But you can't keep getting knocked out like that. It's not good for you. And I say, take some time away, come back, and then give it another shot. And if you get knocked out again, then unfortunately, it might be time to look elsewhere. But I'm a fan of the guy. I like the way he carries himself. He's a great guy, and he's an amazing fighter.
What do you think it is like? Is it a mental thing too? Like when you're 11-0, I think he's 11-0, and then he's 1-5. Does all of a sudden you start to lose confidence and you make decisions that you shouldn't make? I mean, anyone can, I'm sure, get hit right. But is there anything mental that goes into decisions you're making because your confidence isn't where it should be?
Yeah, well, Cody was always that type of guy. He was a brawler. You know what I mean? He believed in himself and he was happy to stand and bang. And he did that a few times. And then who was it? Pedro Munhoz. He did the same thing. He stood there and stood toe to toe and he got knocked out again. And then it was like, okay, now I need to readjust some things. You know, that was definitely ego. Now it's like, okay, now I've got to try and change my style a little bit, be a bit more mature. When I get caught with a shot, not stand there and just trade, which the crowd loves. You know, the crowd loves that, but it's not conducive to a long career and B, potentially winning that fight. And it looked like he'd made some adjustments, but I think, and Matt knows this, you see it all the time with a lot of fighters. There just seems to be, and I don't know if he's there, but the chin just has an expiry date when you get touched on it that many times. And then all of a sudden, I mean, Chuck Liddell, best example ever. You know, Dana used to say he could hit that man with a baseball bat. Towards the end, he was getting every time a good bloody gust of air went at him. No disrespect to the Iceman, of course, pardon me.
But Rich Franklin threw a shot. I mean, his one arm was broken, and he threw it. It wasn't the best shot that Liddell had ever taken at all. And that dropped.
And those shots that Tito Ortiz hit him with in that boxing match were not the best shots he's ever taken either.
Sure.
That's a fact.
Yeah,
I'll tell you, the punch that Anderson Silva hit Tito with was fantastic.
Oh,
fucking great! I just want to throw that in there.
Yeah, it was nice though.
Jimmy, I left the sport with my fucking chin. Dang, I got family to defend. I might not have knees. Oh, well, I got you.
Whoa. Don't talk to me about knees, buddy. I got no knees.
Wait, no. You have 2 new knees. And
shiny.
I
shiny.
I like my head. Listen, I get jealous. I see you running with your stud of a son. You're doing your cardio. I was with you in Abu Dhabi when me and you, I'd probably beat you in a race back then. And I can't walk. You recommend I get the knees done. I want to
Roll
jiu-jitsu, though.
I'm telling you. I commentated in Shenzhen, China, and I went for a walk with Forrest Griffin, and I literally was like an old-age pensioner. I said, Forrest, just go on without me. I couldn't even walk, and I was in so much pain, so much. And I came back, and I don't know the number of surgeries I had on my knees trying to make them better. And then in the end, they just went, listen, Mike, there's nothing for it. You're going to have a knee replacement. And I didn't want to do that for obvious reasons. Anyway, in the end, I bit the bullet and the recovery is awful. I'm not going to lie to you. It's awful. It's horrible. My leg swelled up to about 2.5 times the normal size. It was so painful, but it's only a few weeks. You know what I mean? Get prepared to be very high on a lot of medication. But now, and I've had them done to both legs, zero pain. I run every day. I just did 30 minutes on the treadmill this morning. Normally, I run the hills by my house. Zero pain, zero, nothing.
Could you imagine running the hills before?
No way. It used to kill. Just walking was agony. But I will say this, in terms of doing jiu-jitsu, I have I'm so bloody busy these days. I don't get a chance to go in much, but it is weird still to the one I had on my left knee. I think I got that in 2019. So that's been over 2 years now, 2.5 years. And it's still utterly and completely numb to touch. And then when I get on my knees on a mat, it's not pain, but the sensation is just bizarre and it's very uncomfortable. I can't wait to get on my back.
Like, is it like a numbness or?
It's
like,
just a numbness. It's a numbness, but it feels weird. It's like, I don't know. It's like a weird sensation that you just,
Will it come back? Will it come back?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, there's a big old scar. It's about the same surgeon did it. I think it's fair to, I mean, he did a fantastic job. And, you know, as I say, I'm running every day, but the scar on one side's about an inch thick. The scar on the other side's like a nice little thin little slash. But he said he had less work to do on that side. So.
And yours was bone on bone. It was from arthritis.
Oh, dude, bone on bone. It was killing. I'm telling you, the pain. If you ever speak to Forrest Griffin, ask him. When I was in China, I was so pissed off. And I got like this recently because I need neck surgery again. You know what I mean? Sometimes it gets you down. You're like, why can't I do things? Why can't I go for a walk? Why can't I fucking lift weights? Why can't I run? Why can't I do jiu-jitsu? Why can't I do that? You know, and then, you know, you don't have these thoughts very often, but now and again, you know, you do get in your own thoughts and your own heads and you start to feel sorry for yourself. And like, for fuck's sake, I see other people and they can still run to this day and whatnot. Yeah. The best thing I ever did was have the knee replacements.
That's what I needed to know.
Yeah.
Now, are you still doing the podcast with Lewis or you're not?
I'm still doing the podcast, just not with Lewis. Me and Lewis decided to part ways. He's a bit of a fucking, he's a handful to deal with. Do you know what I mean? And there was a little bit of that going on. So in the end, we said, you know what? Good luck to you. Good luck to me. Let's do our own thing. And all the best. Bon voyage. Wish him nothing but luck and success.
How do you feel doing it by, you're doing it by yourself now?
I do it by myself, but I have the producers and I get like guest co-hosts. We still get guests on, you know, so it's not just me sitting there talking, you know, we get people on and then, you know, we was just relying on a lot of guests. Life is easier. Life is easier. Okay.
By the way, you have a nice setup too, man. You're the lights and stuff in your, the red brick in the back and the blue on one side. It looks good.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yeah, no, so I launched a YouTube channel a few months ago. I had no idea that it would be so successful an endeavor because I'm all about the YouTube now. Holy shit. I thought you had to have like millions upon millions. You know, like a Jake Paul, 20, 30 million. Turns out you don't to make a decent living on YouTube. So I'm cranking out that content every day. Michael Bisping, search it on YouTube. But at 42 years old, it is embarrassing to say, amongst my many other endeavors, I am now, I guess, a goddamn YouTuber, which I am ashamed to say.
Oh, don't be, man. Dude, I'm a gamer. I'm going to hang up with you. I'm going to put a headset on and play video games. I'm not even getting paid for it.
Yeah.
Oh, look, man. I mean, hey, who killed that thing in the middle? Rogan? What am I looking at? That thing looks like it's something out of the fucking...
But they, oh no, that's from Hobby Lobby, $10.
This stuff behind Rogan, he's like, yeah, I killed that with a crossbow.
Oh, yeah, Hobby Lobby. I am nowhere near that cool or that outdoorsy. Although my son, who loves animals, he wants to be a vet, now is obsessed with hunting invasive species. And he watches Joe Rogan and he wants a crossbow. So I thought, all right, I'll get a crossbow. I didn't realize that I ordered like a proper crossbow. Things about 6 foot tall. The arrows are about this long. They're metal. I'm like, son, you're not leaving the house with that thing. You're going to kill somebody. But it's like, yeah. So anyway, my son wants to murder cute little animals because of Joe Rogan.
Okay. Well, dude, I'd feel like a hypocrite though if I said anything because God knows I like some venison.
Sure.
Well, me too. You know, I like a nice steak as much as the next man. I just don't want to kill it myself.
So, Michael, where can people get your stuff? It's YouTube is the main thing you're promoting and your podcast.
Yeah, I mean, the podcast, believe you may have been doing that for years now. Check it out. And I guess on my YouTube channel, check it out. I've always got some videos going up there every day. Is this the end, boys? Is this the end is nigh? Who are you kicking me off for? Who are we
No,
next?
No one. We're done.
Come on, man. Oh. We're easing out of it. We can talk about something else.
I'm joking.
Okay, there's no one left. You're it.
We got similar lives, Michael Bisping. We got similar lives. We chill. We have a good... Hey, thank God most fucking fighters are like talking to that fucking can over there. Oh, me and you would be fucked, no?
Thank God.
Thank goodness, Michael.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I was talking about this yesterday. I left school at 16 with zero qualifications, got into martial arts, managed to make something of myself. Now the fight career is over. Fortunately, A, the sport is so popular, and B, with modern technology and social media and all this type of stuff, I can sit in my ass. I don't leave the house. and I still get to make a living. You know what I mean? What a wonderful world.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? It is crazy how much you can make not going out. Like you can you can make enough disposable income in the house and get your mortgage paid or whatever. It is a nice
nice feeling. It is. And still and be commentating the UFC. I'm so grateful for that gig. I love it. You know, it doesn't feel like work to me. I love because people always say, "Oh, do you miss the sport? Do you think you want to come back?" I'm sure you get that all the time, Matt. Yeah. And I'm like, "Well, yeah, because I feel like I could still do it." And then I see like some of this Jake Paul nonsense and I think I could come in and knock him out, no problem. but then I still get to commentate the UFC, you know, I still get to be a part of the show.
We're doing stuff. We're busy.
Yeah, exactly.
One thing, if you're not busy, just posting old pictures of yourself or something, that can get weird. I see some guys like that. I'm like, oh, shit. Fuck. But, you know, I hang out with my Jimmy. But really quick, what your YouTube thing? Because I get Jimmy. I could definitely see me going down this path.
I can too.
Hey, do it. I'm telling you. Over.
I'm going to follow Bisping's fucking, with his knees, with his fucking YouTube. I'm going to follow this man. Listen, when you're doing your YouTube show, you have like a set time every day you do it? And do you have a premise of that show or you're just putting it on and kicking it with answering questions?
So what I do is most days I put up a video every day on something that's being spoke about in the MMA world. Like yesterday, I talked about Dustin Poirier losing the belt, actually. The title of the video is Dustin's career done and dusted? You know, and then we talked about that. And the answer was no, it's not. Today, I'm going to talk about Nunes. Later in the week, I'll talk about Jake Paul, Tyron Woodley. Once a week, I go live and then I just answer whatever questions. Check this out. I had no idea. You go live, people make donations to ask. And I'm like, I don't want your donations. I don't need that. That's not why I'm doing it. But they do it to ask questions at the end of a live. You've got like $1,500 just from donations. I'm like, I don't need your donations, but they want the questions answering. So it puts them at the top. It's just the way YouTube works. It's a little embarrassing, but I'll take it. Why not?
Fuck that, man. If there's another Panderic, I'll take their questions and their money. Listen, Michael, I have as many kids as you. I got to... Ask me anything.
Yeah, no. I do enjoy it. It's nice. It's nice to interact with, you know, other people. And, you know, but when you're doing the lives, you can end up talking about all kinds of shit as well, not just MMA. Do you know what I mean? Someone will ask you some weird question and you go off on a tangent. So it's fun, you know?
You have a good channel. I'm looking at it as you guys are talking and you have a lot of followers, man. You get fucking over 300,000 people. And I think it looks really good. Yeah.
I only started that in July or August. So the support's been incredible. So yeah. It's really, really taken off and taken on a life of its own. You know, 3 months ago in July, I was busy enough already. And then I started this shit. And now my wife's like, she's on the verge of leaving me. You know, she's like, I used to be with a man. Now you're sitting there with a fucking ring light and a camera talking to your YouTube audience. She's like, who is this person? Who are you? Where is the man that I married?
I'm looking at these. You have some great videos, man. This looks really good. This channel, everything is well put together. You have one video with over 2 million views. These are great, man. This is really, channel looks fucking excellent.
Yeah, just real quick on that one that has over 2 million views. I went to Bourbon Street, New Orleans. I got punched in the face of some random dude on the street. You might have heard the story.
I heard about that.
Yeah. So then I talked about it on the podcast because the punch was nothing. He told me to stop filming. I told him to go fuck himself. And he said, I'm not going to tell you again. And in the end, he sucker punched me, the little prick. I was there with my wife and kids and he was with about 20, 30 guys. They looked like trouble.
Definitely. Wait, you were filming him? What were you doing?
No. They're all on like these... tubs of paint upside down, but they were using them as drums. And then there was women twerking and stuff. It was like, you know, it was fun. And I'm being a tourist, so I get my phone. I was doing a little Instagram story, as you do. And then the guy was like, yo, you can't film here. I'm like, hey, buddy, it's Bourbon Street. Of course I can. Come on. He said, yo, I'm not going to tell you again. I said, well, I'm not going to tell you again. I said, I'm going to film, so deal with it. And he's like, and then he got right in my face. He said, I ain't going to tell you again, motherfucker. Don't film. I said, suck my fucking dick. And he just went bang. And he fair play to the guy. So he punches me in the face, but it was literally like, ding. It was like the softest punch I've ever felt. Right. And he was acting all hard and macho. And that was his punch. My instinctual reaction was literally to laugh out loud. I laughed my head off so hard. I was like, wow, you're acting all tough and that's your punch. Oh my God. I said, come on, guys, get out of it. All right, tough guy. take care. So I went back and I was laughing my head off. And I put it on social media and then I talked about it on my podcast. This little prick came out, did his own video on YouTube talking about it, saying that I hit like a bitch and stuff. So that's that video there. So we
did you hit him back or no?
No, I walked away laughing. I walked away. Come on, I'm with my wife and kids. I'm not going to get into a brawl on Bourbon Street. Come on. That was the old Michael Bisping.
What did he do when you, is he shit talking you after he fucking, you laughed at him?
No, he didn't. No, he just kind of stood there like, you know, giving it one of them. And I just laughed my head off. I said, come on, let's get out of here. You know, what are you going to do? It's fine. Yeah. He didn't hurt me. I didn't feel threatened. And if he could have got arrested, could have got stabbed, could have got shot, would have terrified my children. Do you know what I mean? Come on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jimmy might have shot himself.
Oh, I first of all, I would have stopped filming when requested. That's the difference between me and you.
Yeah, but you know, he was just being a dick. But this is the funny thing. He said, "Yo," then he says on this video that he did. He goes, "You know, I asked him not to film because I don't want people to film me because of my criminal background. Okay, I don't want to be seen on camera." But he's saying this on a YouTube video that he's recording, putting out. Yeah, he's not the smartest guy. God bless him. I feel sorry for the guy.
Oh, wait, so he didn't even know it was you, Michael? He has no idea who he actually punched until your rebuttal video.
He does now. And I've had threats. Don't come back to New Orleans. It's a small city. We're going to be looking for you. I'm like, okay, motherfucker. Shut up.
They're mad at you?
They're mad at me. Well, because I've been shit talking to him. I'm like, everyone, find this guy in New Orleans. And then I've been sent other pictures of, videos of the guy sucker punching other people whilst wearing the exact same clothes of the night when he sucker punched me. The guy probably stinks, needs a shower, needs some new clothes. He's not very smart. You know, come on.
Wow.
God bless him.
Jimmy, there's a lot of idiots out there, Jimmy. Yeah. You got to train, Jimmy.
Yeah, I guess so. But then again, I would have just stopped filming. But, oh, I didn't realize I didn't have a permit. And I would have left. I'm a pussy.
Yeah.
Well, good for you, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, it was good. All right, then. Well, pleasure talking to you, fellas, as always.
Yeah, you're great, great, great on the air, man. It's so good to see you with that full-time gig. You're really awesome at it.
Thank you very much. All right, well, listen, is this the end?
Yes. Yeah, our show is done.
It is over now, man. And listen, I love listening to your commentary. Yeah. Dominic Cruz, who's not known for giving compliments while attacking DC, goes, Michael Bisping, he does his homework. So congrats on doing your homework, young man.
Oh, do you know what? But that is a thing, isn't it? Because I did not do homework at high school. I think once for 5 years, I never did. Do you know what I mean? And now that's literally my life, doing homework. And it's hard, but you got to do it. I love calling the fights and I love calling the action. But as they're walking out and even mid-fight, you got to know these people because you got to relay them to the viewers at home that have no idea. Certainly the newer guys, you know, like the stars, whatever. I know them like the back of my hand. But the newer guys, you got to educate yourself and then you got to educate the viewer. And with that comes a little bit of responsibility. Because for these guys, you know, first fight of the night, it's their first fight in the UFC. They don't want to feel like they're being overlooked. To them, this is the Super Bowl, you know, so they want to have a guy that's, you know, going to put the work in. And it can be a bit of a drag, but that's what you got to do. That's what it calls for.
It's called employment, not enjoyment, as they say.
Boom. I like that. I'm taking
my friend Ray used to say that.
Yeah. Employment, not enjoyment. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, listen, enjoy the rest of your day. All right, Matt, all the best. Jim.
Yeah, later, champ.
Take care, fellas.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. That was the great Michael Bisping, one of my favorite people in MMA, and also the Sklar brothers.
They were nice, too. I like them. I like their energy, man. I want to see what they're going to do on that Fight Pass thing. And then look for an upcoming UFC Fight Pass with myself at Ray Longo's. It was a horrendous experience for myself, you know? And, you know, don't get me wrong, though. I Longo's still a good man, but I don't need his dog on my lap when I'm eating my drunken Sicilian.
Understandable.
All right, man. Hey, listen, Jimmy, love you.
Yes, I love you.
Congrats to the champions, Charles Oliveira, for defending his title.
Juliana Pena.
And Juliana Pena for doing arguably the biggest upset ever.
Agree.
We'll talk more about that on next week's show.
Goodbye.
Love you, Jimmy. Did you leave? Jimmy?